We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Why, oh why, didn't I pick the blue pill?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Tackling life's most important questions. This is the Don Johnson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Don Johnson Show. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. Lots to talk about, as usual. Interesting, though, as I survey my stories in front of me, spread out across the soundboard here, I notice a particular theme, not something that I really planned as I gathered stories that caught my interest over the week, but it turns out that I have a lot of parenting stories in front of me. We have a story called Getting My Kids Into Harvard Is Not My End Game from Colleen Duggan, which I really liked. We have a couple of stories about disabled kids that I think are particularly relevant this week, especially in light of the movie Me Before You. Later on in the show, if we have time, we have a couple of conversion stories that I liked that are not so much parenting. But I want to start with this. Three stories about women and childbearing. And if the fact that most women are having kids later, if at all, is a good thing. I'm going to start with this one. Jennifer Roback Morse recently wrote an article, Young Women Are Gambling on a Losing Game. And Morse starts out with a reference to a recent brouhaha on Twitter regarding the Huffington Post editor's meeting. If you're familiar with the Huffington Post online magazine started by Arianna Huffington 10 years ago, well, the editor, Liz Heron, took a picture of their editor's meeting and put it on Twitter with the caption, "Notice anything about this Huffington Post editor's meeting?" And the first thing that everyone noticed, and I'm surprised that she didn't expect this, but the first thing they noticed was that it was all women and it was all white. There was zero diversity on the editorial staff. I'm not sure what she was trying to get at, but that was what people noticed. Now, Morse doesn't take much time with that. She says she noticed something different, and that is that all of the women were in their 20s. She says they appear to be 20-something or 30-somethings at most, with the possible exception of Heron herself, who's the editor. To me, this photo illustrates the most poignant sociological fact of our time. Delayed childbearing is the price of entry into the professional classes. Look at these eager young faces, she said. These young ladies have high hopes for their lives. They believe that by landing this great job, they are set. Once they are established in their careers, then and only then can they think seriously about marriage and motherhood. They do not realize, she says, that they are giving themselves over to careers during their peak fertility years, with the expectation that somehow, someday, they can, quote, have it all. Well, says Jennifer Roback Morse, they are being sold a cynical lie. She says, here's the bargain we professional women have been making. We want to participate in higher education and the professions. As the price of doing so, we agree to chemically neuter ourselves during our peak childbearing years with various types of birth control. Then, when we are finally financially and socially ready for motherhood, we agree to subject ourselves to invasive, degrading, and possibly dangerous fertility treatments. I am no longer willing to accept this bargain, says Jennifer Roback Morse. These arrangements are not pro-woman. They are simply anti-fertility. Any woman who wants to be a mother, including giving birth to her own children, taking care of her own children, and loving their father, needs a better way. Until now, we have been adapting our bodies to the university and the market. I say we should respect our bodies enough to demand that the university and the market adapt to us and our bodies. Now, this is an interesting point. She's saying, I'm a professional woman, I've played the game just like everybody else, and you know what? It's been a disaster. Not only for me, but for the rest of the women. And interestingly, I have two other articles from this week saying exactly the same thing. That the notion that women should be putting off childbearing until they are past their career, or, on the other hand, trying to have a career and a child at the same time, and that this is somehow the height of enlightenment, that this is indeed having it all, is just a big scam, according to these articles I have. Here's one called Top 10 Reasons You Should Have Kids Before 30. And this is a story by Joy Pullman, And she ends up saying basically exactly the same thing that Jennifer Roebuck Morse did. Here's how she starts. In less than 10 years, I've done a complete 180 regarding my interest in and plans for children. Through high school, college, and early marriage, I plan to do things the way everyone now says you should. Finish college, get a job, get comfortable in finances, career path, and marriage. Then, and only then, around age 35 or so, grudgingly allow a baby or two to inhabit my body. Expel them as quickly as possible, then tie my tubes. Seriously, that was my plan, she said. Well, besides being horrifically naive and narcissistic, it was a stupid plan. Luckily, life knocked me off the stupid train, but meanwhile everyone else was hopping aboard. The Wall Street Journal reported last week that the U.S. fertility rate has fallen to match its record low. Then she starts the main block of her piece, saying that our current life script hurts young people. Just exactly what Morse was saying. We have a life script. We have a way that it's supposed to be done, just like all the editors of the Huffington Post. But that's not working. That it's damaging to all of these young women. And young men, I might add. The reasons for this are obvious, she says. The modern life script for a woman is that she basically do everything else in life before she begins having children. The problem with this life script is that it makes childbearing less likely and more difficult. Millennials themselves blame this messed up life script for the huge gap between their overwhelming desire. There's actually just 6% of childbearing age Americans that don't want children. That's according to the sociological stats. Most young ladies want babies, but that's not reconciled then to the fact that most of them don't have kids until their 30s. They're scared to start having kids, says Pullman, because they started their adult lives financially behind, both with college debt and inside a weak job market that is making it difficult for them to pay that debt off. In other words, they've been getting bad advice about what to do with their lives, coupled with bad government policies, such as Obamacare, making it even more difficult for them to overcome the effects of that bad advice. So she says, this means our cultural script for women hurts both women and society at large. Exactly what Morse was saying. Everybody's getting hurt. Everyone's supposed to follow the script. And it's just doing damage to people. Somehow we need to change it. And so here Joy Pullman and Jennifer Roebuck Morse are exactly on the same page. Instead of doing school and career before marriage and children, says Pullman, society should encourage women to have children at the optimal biological time, both for women and children's health and their happiness. And that's in a woman's 20s. We need a new life script for women that helps them achieve the vast majority's goals of becoming mothers, rather than making it seem impossible that they can ever do so. So we need to encourage young people not only to get married and have kids in their 20s, and of course this is a general rule, says Pullman, there's certainly some cases where it won't fit. And we need to make it possible for them to do so in myriad ways, such as helping them get through college with less debt and making space for alternate ways to get started in life besides that four-year degree. She goes on then in that story to say that if you want kids, you should aim to start having them before you're 30 years old, and here are 10 reasons why. So let's go through some of these reasons. The number one reason for having kids before you're 30 is that your 20s are your physical and reproductive peak. This is just a biological reality. To go back to the Jennifer Roebuck Morse article, she notes just how increasingly unlikely healthy childbirth is as your age increases. For example, if you wait until you're after 40, according to a study of in vitro fertilization in Australia, those type of pregnancies, that is, women over 40 who have in vitro, they're 4 to 5 times more likely to end in stillbirth. The average Australian woman aged 41 to 42 years old had a 5.8% chance of having a live birth per initiated cycle, and women over 45 had a 1.1% chance only of having a live birth per initiated cycle. In other words, a 99% chance of failure. As Joy Pullman says, a woman's 20s are the lowest risk time for her to physically bear a baby, heal after birth, and continue to physically sustain a baby through nursing. It's just a plain fact. Why wouldn't we tell women this truth in order to spare them needless physical and emotional suffering from increased rates of miscarriage, inability to conceive, probabilities of birth defects, and so on, that happen as a direct result of older childbearing? This seems to me to be just a no-brainer. It's healthier for the woman. It's healthier for the baby. It's just better all around to have babies during your peak childbearing years. Now, we'll have more on this. We'll have a few more of those 10 reasons why you should have kids before you're 30. And we'll also address the situation of working moms, those that did have kids, like my wife, for example, has worked basically our whole marriage while we've had kids, how that works out for most people. And unless you have a very special circumstance, that's a difficult one too. So we'll talk about that. Before we take our break, hey, let me remind you to come see me and many of the other hosts here on Immaculate Heart Radio at the Elevate Conference coming up in the Bay Area. June 25th at the Santa Clara Marriott. It's going to be an awesome time. I'll be there. Patrick Madrid will be there. Cy Kellett, Phil Sandoval, Chris Aubert, Joe Sikora, Terry Barber, Raymond Arroyo is going to be there. I'm looking forward to this. Come say hi. Get your tickets now before they sell out. You can find them at ihradio.com. All right, we are going to be right back after this short break. When we do, more parenting stuff, plus later in the show, a letter from an 11-year-old wheelchair athlete who asks, "Dear Hollywood, why do you want me dead?" You're listening to The Don Johnson Show on Immaculate Heart Radio. Stick around. We will be right back after this short break.
Now on DVD and digital download, a story about finding truth, meaning, and beauty in the last place they expected.
I can't become Catholic. What, am I insane? There's no way.
A film to encourage your faith and help you reach out to others.
I thought, this is just nonsense. These people are crazy. Atheism is much more rational.
Convinced, featuring over 20 of today's most interesting and articulate Catholic voices, including Jennifer Fulweiler, Scott Hahn, Abby Johnson, and Patrick Madrid. Get convinced now at convincedmovie.com. The Diocese of Orange is excited to announce our new online store. The Orange County Catholic Bookstore has thousands of Catholic product offerings, from prayer cards to crucifixes, statues, and icons. Whether you're searching for that special devotional gift, products, or books that support your personal faith journey, or a beautiful image or statue for your home or business, please visit store.occatholic.com. Proceeds from purchases help to sustain the social outreach, educational, and pastoral ministry of the Diocese of Orange.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Don Johnson Radio Show. My name's Don. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. We've been talking a little bit about the age at which women have children, if they have children at all in today's culture, and that age has been getting higher and higher, as you probably know, and now it seems the cultural script for women is to wait until your mid-30s, even. And several articles this week from women who have accepted that script, lived it out, and now say this has been a disaster. And as they look around at other women who have followed that same script, it's been the same for them. This has been bad for women and bad for kids. And so we looked at Jennifer Roback Morse's article about how young women are gambling on a losing game and how culture's been feeding them a cynical lie. And now we're in the middle of Joy Pullman's piece about the top 10 reasons you should have kids before you're 30. And the number one reason, as you might guess, is that it's simply the best physical time. That biologically, that the 20s are a woman's peak childbearing years. The number two reason sort of expands on that. There's reduced risk of birth defects. As a woman ages, her eggs degrade. And that's also true of a man's sperm, by the way. Unhealthy eggs and sperm make unhealthy babies. That's just the way it works. That's why risk for birth defects and conditions such as autism increase markedly as mothers and fathers age. Also, mothers who are age 35 and older have a significantly higher risk for, among other maladies, giving birth prematurely, which also gives rise to more health problems for the child, and having babies with Down syndrome. Now, I have a great story about a child with Down syndrome a little later in the show. And obviously, any child is made in the image of God and should be loved. But that doesn't mean we have to consciously take steps that increase those risks, I don't think. Then, of course, says Pullman, there's miscarriage and infertility, which are sky high among older mothers and fathers. and directly correlated with the rise of the fertility industry. She says if you think kids are expensive now, wait until you see your IVF bill, that's in vitro fertilization bill. Not to mention the emotional trauma involved in this whole process. The bottom line is that as we build a culture in which most of our children are born later, we are also creating a culture in which there are more sick and deformed children. Then she goes on to number three, kids make you more efficient with time and money. One of my great shocks moving into adulthood has been to see my single peers remain in debt longer than we have. I'd expected our kids to drain family finances and parent time. Well, they do that, and I'll vouch for that, but the pressure kids put on family time and finances has forced us to manage both better. Pullman argues that if you're single, you're less likely to think about the annual cost of your daily latte or the fact that a spring trip to Costa Rica with your college buds may mean that you're eating dog food during retirement later. But if you're married, you tend to think about that more. Seems like a decent point to me. Also, she points out, it seems that both fathers and mothers are more productive at work than their childless peers. You'd think it'd be the opposite, since parents spend less time in the office. But it seems that parents are actually more efficient than their childless peers, on average. They work more and water cooler chat less, it seems. Her fourth reason is that you'll have a faster post-birth recovery. Seems to go with number one. In general, you're going to have a healthier pregnancy, healthier child, healthier post-birth. Number five is that you'll have more energy for playing. Now, I'm a guy who had kids a little bit later. I was in my 30s. And yeah, I'm feeling it now a little bit as you play with the youngins. Don't have quite the energy level that I used to. Joy Pullman tells the story of her boss who congratulated her when she had a kid young because he says that he had had kids later like I did. And it was getting uncomfortable a little bit to wrestle on the floor with his little critters. The number six reason for having kids in your 20s is that it protects them from being a sandwich generation. And what's a sandwich generation? Well, it's that generation of productive age adults that have to care for their aging parents at the same time as they're caring for young kids. And that's just a product of generational math. If you have kids when you're 35 and their kids have your grandkids at 35, then the people in the middle will have 70-year-old parents and toddlers simultaneously. So pretty basic math there. Whereas in the past, the grandparents might have been a little bit more able to help you with your kids, and you've got a better system that way. Now it's more that you're taking care of them and the kids at the same time. And she notes there's a public spending component to this. Because we live in a social welfare state, the sandwich generation not only personally sponsors and supports their kids and parents simultaneously, but they have the economic burden of having their taxes siphoned off to pay the young and old, who together consume the lion's share of government spending. Right? Most of the government spending goes to take care of the elderly and the young. And who's paying the taxes? Well, that sandwich generation. So she says, if you have kids in your 20s, you're a little bit more protected from being in that generation. The seventh reason, and this is according to Joy Pullman, to have kids in your 20s is that our society really needs to have people to have more kids. Again, pretty simple math equation. If you start having kids at age 35 and space them out by 2 to 3 years, you pretty much will only be able to fit in two by the time you're done. And two kids is both not what women want, it's not the average ideal family size, usually rounds up to at least three, and it's not enough to keep our economy and that welfare state stable. The replacement rate is 2.1 kids, and we've sort of hovered around that. America has been better, certainly, than Europe lately, which is well below the replacement rate, and our rate has been falling as well. So, and I think all we need to do is watch what Japan and Europe are experiencing due to those plummeting birth rates. You need to be able to replenish your society. I don't think that should be an overly controversial statement. The number eight reason for having kids before you're 30 is it's the best positioning for your career. Now, here she goes back to that life sequence we talked about. The one that the culture has been pushing on us is that of extended credentialing, followed by work, followed by years of finding yourself, followed by maybe and suspiciously regarded marriage and kids. Well, that's fine if you never want to have kids at all. But for the majority of women who do want marriage and children, and guarantees that either A, they'll never get what they want, or B, it will put them through needless suffering to get what they want. So you get out of college at age 22 or 24, Then you spend 5 years paying off college debts. Now you're 27. Then you have to get married and get a down payment for a house, and you're 32. So by your 30s, you're saying, okay, let's try some kids. Then she says, if being on chemical birth control hasn't messed you up physically, you do generate a baby, just as your career is starting to take off. So then she says, at that time when you're ready to try for some kids, it's right as your career is starting to take off. After all, it takes about a decade to get specialized and experienced enough in a field to get the salary that you want. And so if you stop to have kids then, you're going to be stuck at that baseline for the rest of your career. But she says, what if you started having babies in your 20s and largely postponed a career and any advanced training? So your career isn't established yet, so you're losing less financially. If you have your 2, 3, or 4 kids by 30 or so, then you can go back to school or work when the kids do. You have an unbroken stretch of 30 years to pursue a career. She says that's a saner way to get real about their biology and sync their life ambitions with their life cycles. Now, I'm not saying that that's the ideal path either. We have a couple more stories here about careers and what we should be searching for in life and what we should be seeking after as our priorities. But it's just another example in these stories about how the path that has been presented to women by the culture, their expected life narrative, just doesn't match up on any level. Whether they want the job or the career or the baby, it certainly shouldn't be job first, then baby, then try to get back to job. That's not going to work. So we'll have the last two when we come back. We'll have number 9 and 10 when we come back. Then we'll talk about the ugly secret of working moms. And again, don't get me wrong, I'm not down on working moms. I'm married to one. I understand in today's culture, many working moms have to be out there. I don't mean this as a negative towards anyone. Don't get me wrong. I just found these stories this week that all seem to be pointing toward a particular theme that these feminists, career women, all of them, had all come to the same conclusion simultaneously that this hasn't worked out. I'm not happy doing this. We need to approach this whole topic in a different way. And so we'll explore a little bit about that when I come back. My name is Don Johnson. If you'd like to learn more about me, you can find me at donjohnsonministries.org. There you can find podcasts, recordings of past shows. You can find the book that I wrote called How to Talk to a Skeptic, and much, much more. That's donjohnsonministries.org. Also, don't forget to check out my movie, Convinced. Go to convincedmovie.com. We had a great screening this last week in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Great attendance. People very excited. We're already planning another one for that area. One coming up in Lincoln, Nebraska on June 30th. If you would like a screening in your area, please drop me a line. They're very easy to set up and can have a great effect in your parish. It's just been so wonderful to see how God is using this film to get people excited about their faith, but also to draw others in. Atheists, agnostics, non-Catholic Christians, all are being affected by the Convinced movie. So check that out at convincedmovie.com. Again, you're listening to the Don Johnson Radio Show on Immaculate Heart Radio. We will be right back after this short break. Stick around.
This is Jim Hooper, 2016 nominee for St. Joseph Radio Man of the Year. I'm excited to let you know that the 2017 Man of the Year dinner is coming up on March 18th. The deadline for submission is March 1st, and it's an encouragement to all Catholic men and Catholics in general to get active and get involved. For more information, call Sheila at 714-402-6347 or go to the website
OCCatholicMan.org. That's OCCatholicMan.org.
Thanks, and we hope to see you at the dinner.
Welcome back to the Don Johnson Show. My name is Don. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. We've been talking a little bit about the cultural expectations for women and how many women are coming to the conclusion that something is messed up out there with the notion that we have to first go to college, then start a career, then get successful in a career, and then maybe have children, one or two, in our 30s at some point, and then try to get back to our career or have them both at the same time. They're saying, this isn't working. Something's not right. We referenced an article by Jennifer Roback Morse called The Young Women Are Gambling on a Losing Game. And we've also been going through an article by Joy Pullman called 10 reasons you should have kids before you're 30. Let's get to the last two of those. Number 9 is that your biological clock is, well, she uses a word I'm not going to use on the radio, but let's just say it's not a nice thing. She tells a story about being on the phone with a radio host who, after our segment, said, "You have 4 children? You are so lucky. I want children so badly, but I did what everyone told me to do and put my career first. I didn't know I would want kids someday. And now that I'm 40 and I want kids, I can't have them. I'm not even married." Pullman says that this radio host always comes to her mind when she hears women of a certain age, that being late 30s, early 40s, opening up about their struggles with infertility and their sudden and sharp desires for children right about the time their ability to bear a child has decreased drastically. She says young women need to hear that a career is not one long, unending upward flight of inspiration, recognition, and promotions. We young women underestimate our future selves. The ease of fertility when young, combined with our modern but false idea that we can control procreation, gives us a foolish overconfidence about things like, "I don't think I really want kids at all," or, "Once I'm ready, I'll just go off the pill and we'll start a family." But she says the job market can be highly disillusioning. We can start out life ready to take on the world and climb the corporate ladder only to find, sometimes when it's too late, that the global 21st century economy can be a really unfulfilling, lonely place. That climbing the corporate ladder can feel really empty. Being CEO isn't all it's cracked up to be. She says that doesn't always happen, but it happens enough that young women need to hear it, that the careers aren't necessarily just the best thing going. That it's not all inspiration, recognition, promotions. It's a lot of drudgery. It's kind of like taking care of kids, she says. She notes that she thinks this contributes to what we hear about often, the employer trouble with millennial employees who need to be coddled and patted on the head and told what to do. Well, she says their dreams of professional life have been from glammed up TV shows and movies, and expectations from schools that cater to their desire for entertainment, rather than instilling in them a strong work ethic. In reality, though, professional work can be a lot like office space. Almost no one's going to get that corner office or even a prominent position in a major company. And doing what it takes to get there can feel dehumanizing. You need to take that reality into consideration, she says, when you're thinking about postponing having those kids. You can be a big fish in a small pond of your family and community, or a small fish in the great lakes of professional life. Fact is, a boss can almost always pretty easily replace you, but your children cannot. If you want to be a hero, leader, or celebrity, the number one way to get there is by having children. You are their world, truly. And almost no one can say that professionally, she says. Pretty good point. And here's the final one, number 10. The final reason, this is from Joy Pullman, of her top 10 reasons that you should have kids before you're 30, fertility treatments are terrible. Again, she uses language I can't use on the radio, but they're just not good. Companies and media act as if freezing one's eggs or getting fertility treatments are no big deal. That's crazy talk, she says. There's huge side effects, they're expensive, they're ethically dubious, and they're not even always effective. Lastly, she says, babies conceived through IVF are prone to birth defects at horrifying rates. I mentioned that earlier about the percentage. She says, hey, listen, you can avoid all that, just have kids earlier. The final thing she says in this good article by Joy Pullman, I do realize that responsible women and men need to find a husband or wife in order to make all this work. You owe your children married parents. I also know the sexual revolution, besides our anti-fertility cultural life script, is just crushing our ability to make that happen. Something I talk about often on the show, the sexual revolution has been devastating for women. Men are less interested in putting a ring on it if A, they can get sex without commitment, and B, because no-fault divorce is a horrible deal for them. And she says, I get all this. But the fact is, we need to try. We need to try to start that family and have kids before 30. Pretty good insight, I think, from a woman who's obviously been there and speaking from experience. And I found it interesting that several articles this week were all saying the same thing, including this one, from a slightly different take. This is from Starshine Rochelle at theweek.com, The Ugly Secret of Working Moms. Now, this is a lady who didn't postpone childbearing, but tried to have it all in a different way by having the work and the kids. And she says, I have an ugly secret. For 18 years, I've felt like a fraud both at home and at work. From the moment I became pregnant with my first child, who graduates high school this month, I've had the unshakable sensation that I'm faking big chunks of my life, playing the part of a competent and confident mother and professional, but in fact always shortchanging someone their due, arriving late to work after delivering a forgotten lunchbox to school, darting out of a too-long meeting to arrive at the school awards ceremony 30 seconds after they call my kid's name, emailing with the college counselor when I'm supposed to be watching that IT training, or grinning robotically through my son's trumpet lesson story at the dinner table when my mind is on that proposal I need to finish by morning. She says she's talked to others about this, including Katrina Alcorn, who's an author of a book called Maxed Out, American Moms on the Brink. And she says that this is not surprising. There are many moms out there who are pushed to the brink trying to do it all. We're expected to do our jobs as if we don't have children, they say, and then raise our children as if we don't have jobs. If you think about the model of the ideal mother, it's the person who sacrifices everything for her child. But the ideal worker is someone who can drop everything and go on a business trip at a moment's notice, right? The best worker is one who's dedicated to the job above all else. But the best mother is the one who's dedicated to the kids above all else. Many times in today's economy, you're not supposed to leave at 5 o'clock to pick up the kids. And so if you're trying to do both, you are faking it to some extent. Now, Katrina Alcorn, the one who wrote the book about being maxed out, she was living in the Bay Area a few years back, had the spouse, the healthy kids, great job, successful tech company. But as her family and career grew, she began having trouble managing all that. She was juggling daycare and clients, sick kids and business trips. Many of you know the story. I certainly do as well. She says, somewhere between being walked in on while pumping breast milk at work and receiving a company-wide email from a male employee who was grossed out by her bodily fluids being in the office fridge, well, she lost it. She was having panic attacks and was plagued by increasing anxiety and depression over her inability to cope with the, what she calls the super awesome plus career bounty we're supposed to be grateful for. After suffering a nervous breakdown while traveling to Target to buy diapers, she quit her job and had to spend a year decompressing and living on savings just to remember what contentment feels like. Well, she came out of that experience saying, listen, it doesn't have to be that way. And now she's focused on helping workplaces be better environments for working parents and helping parents be better workers. She says, we can't say that society's answer to this dilemma is for people not to have kids. That's not a sustainable solution. We've already talked about this. Obviously, we can't stop having kids or have them later. That's what we've been saying for the rest of this show. But it doesn't work to try to put work and family all together. And she says it's silly to say that having kids is only a luxury for the rich, who can afford not to work or hire another adult to live in their house and cook and clean and pick up their kids. So what are we supposed to do? Well, she doesn't really offer a specific solution in that article. But I would point out that we have to order our lives according to reality. And being made in the image of God, being made for family, being made indeed to have children, most of us, I understand. Not everyone is called to have children. Not everyone's called to be married and have that life. I get that. But in general, that's what we're called to do. When we line ourselves up with God's priorities rather than society's that says we have to have a particular income, maybe we need to sacrifice some income for our kids. When society says that only people who have a particular kind of job are esteemed, we need to reject all that. What's important is to be esteemed in the eyes of God. Here's an interesting article by Colleen Duggan called Getting My Kids into Harvard is Not My Endgame. She starts out saying, I received an email from my 9-year-old daughter's dance studio stating that if she missed any more ballet classes, she would not participate in the yearly recital. Well, I did my due diligence and typed up an explanation for her absence, coupled with the appropriate apology, she says, but it took sincere effort to refrain from reminding the director that her daughter's not a professional dancer. Isn't that the truth? That some of these extracurricular events our kids are involved in, man, you think they were getting paid for this on a professional level. They're not. She goes on to say, nor is she an Olympic athlete. She will not grace the stage as Baryshnikov's ballet partner. But she finds great enjoyment in dancing, and that pleasure is enough for me to continue with lessons. I don't really care if she isn't the lead in the Nutcracker Ballet, or if she occasionally misses practice because of legitimate family commitments. I live in an area where children's extracurricular schedules run parents, she says, and I do too. Not all parents. But I'll tell you what, a lot of parents run around by their kids' extracurricular activities. You look at their schedule, and it's basically, here's where the kids need to be at this particular time, and that's the whole thing. She notes we go from music lessons to dance lessons to robotic clubs to art, soccer, baseball, horseback riding, lacrosse, etc. There's no time for family dinners or throwing the football or reading aloud. There's no time for children to foster creativity. We're just too scheduled up. Is that the case in your community? I suspect it probably is. But is that what we should be after? When we come back, we'll finish this article. It's called Getting My Kids Into Harvard Is Not My End Game. And we'll also have a letter by young Ella French that she wrote to Hollywood saying, "Why do you want me dead?" You're listening to The Don Johnson Show on Immaculate Heart Radio. While you're listening to this quick break, find me on Twitter, at Don Johnson Show, or Facebook, facebook.com/The Don Johnson Show. We will be right back. Stick around. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Don Johnson Show. My name is Don. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. If you're just joining us, we've been talking a little bit about parenting. And I had just started an article by Colleen Duggan called Getting My Kids Into Harvard Is Not My End Game. She talks about how the lives of the families in her community are essentially driven by their kids' extracurricular activities. She says these families seem to do whatever it takes to make sure that their kids have a fighting chance at a, quote, successful life, even if that means mortgaging the house or putting the extracurricular activities on a credit card or having zero time for any other family events. They think that the more opportunities their children have, the greater the chance their children will do well. If their kids are pushed hard to achieve, they believe, their kids will carry a workhorse effort with them into life, potentially becoming CEOs of companies, doctors, lawyers, or at least high-wage employees. As if that's the end-all and be-all of what it means to be a successful person. And I think this is the key to this article and a really good point. Hey, it's not bad to have extracurricular activities. It's not bad to be stellar academically, to develop educational skills, athletic abilities, all of those things. Great. Good. We're not saying that those are wrong. We need to produce doctors, lawyers, CEOs of corporations. However, as a parent, should that be our ultimate end game? Should we spend every last waking minute and every last cent on making sure that our kids are the CEOs? She suggests that, you know what? I'm not going to go after that. If that happens, great. My parenting end game is this, that my kids develop an appreciation for what is beautiful, good, and true, and for them to spend their lives pursuing those things to make the world a better place. My end game is for my children to desire heaven. My end game for my children is to love God and their neighbor. My end game is that my children discern God's will for them, which may be in the field of medicine or law or business or plumbing or carpentry or whatever, and apply what they've used in their academic and artistic formation to fulfill His desire. My end game is not high SAT scores or national merit scholars, although we're not opposed to those things. My end game is not children who become cardiologists or Supreme Court justices, unless God wants it first. My end game is not padded resumes and acceptance into name brand schools. It's not that I don't care about my children's worldly future. I devote my time to offer a classical curriculum, including great books, grammar, writing, Latin. Some might even say that I'm a parent who doesn't have appropriate goals for her children, but I disagree, says Colleen Duggan. Nothing is more difficult than perfect union in God. Heaven requires a death to self and a desire to do God's will alone. Getting to heaven isn't for wimps. It's for people who are in it to win it. I think that's pretty good, that our focus needs to be first and foremost on God, on being people who are driven with a desire for heaven, who are driven by the good, the true, and the beautiful, and on being the people that God created us to be. If all of those other things come along too, well, hey, great. But I think she's got the right idea here. First and foremost, it's got to be about God. Again, that article is by Colleen Duggan called Getting My Kids into Harvard is Not My End Game. And don't misunderstand, I don't think she's opposed to Harvard. She'd be okay with her kids going to Harvard. But that's not the priority. All right. Before we close here, I did want to mention an interesting letter by Ella French, who is an 11-year-old wheelchair athlete. And she's reacting to the movie Me Before You. Now, I haven't seen the movie, but I've read enough about it to know that it's a pro-euthanasia movie. That is to say that there is a disabled person in it who is killed, and this is seen as a good thing in the movie. Well, Ella French writes this to Hollywood. This could have been a great movie. It could have been the love story of two people, and one of them just happens to use a chair. It happens all the time. The people in love don't think about the chair. It's the other people who think it's a big deal. The thing about the chair is it's just a thing. It's my legs. It's how I get around. That's it. While you're sitting in your offices crying about the bravery of this guy who kills himself and leaves everyone else to mourn him, which seems pretty selfish to me, I'm going to be out living the amazing life you didn't even bother to know was possible. I have friends and go on sleepovers and live a regular life. Remember, this is being written by an 11-year-old wheelchair athlete. She's telling Hollywood what a mess they have made of their movie, Me Before You, a love story in which the guy in the wheelchair commits suicide in the end. She says, if you want to see what life with a wheelchair really looks like, you can come and hang out with me in Venice Beach in July while I'm defending my skating title out there. Because while you were thinking that living in a wheelchair would make you want to kill yourselves, I was busy becoming a pro skater and learning how to do drop-ins, wheelies, and ride the rail at the skate park. All of those ideas you have about being, quote, confined to a chair are wrong. My chair doesn't just fly down the ramps. It can also show me who the haters are. Don't look now, but it's pointing right at you, she says. Hoping your next story is a better one. That's from Ella French, a 11-year-old wheelchair athlete who asks Hollywood, why do you want me dead? Here's a similar story about a mom who has a baby with Down syndrome. And she writes a letter as well, this one to the doctor who suggested that she get an abortion. And I want to read a little bit of this to you because I think it's also touching. This is a story as told to ABC News. Courtney Baker took more than a year to write and mail a letter she had been thinking about since she was pregnant with her daughter with special needs, Emerson Faith. Baker told ABC News, quote, I knew how important it was going to be to write that letter before Emmy was ever born. Well, the Sanford, Florida mom finally dropped that letter in the mail at the end of May to the doctor who she said delivered her daughter's prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome. Then she shared it on her Facebook page, and it's gone viral since then. The doctor, Baker said, suggested that she terminate her pregnancy. Even after she refused, she said she continued to feel pressured. She says, every action from opening and closing the mailbox to raising the red flag was closure for me. Here's what the letter read. Dear doctor, a friend recently told me that when her prenatal specialist would see her child during her sonograms, he would comment, he's perfect. Once her son was born with Down syndrome, she visited that same doctor. He looked at her little boy and said, I told you, he's perfect. Her story tore me apart. While I was so grateful for my friend's experience, it filled me with such sorrow because of what I should have had. I wish you would have been that doctor. I came to you during the most difficult time in my life, she says. I was terrified, anxious, and in complete despair. I didn't know the truth yet about my baby, and that's what I desperately needed from you. But instead of support and encouragement, you suggested we terminate our child. I told you her name, and you asked us again if we understood how low our quality of life would be with a child with Down syndrome. You suggested we reconsider our decision to continue the pregnancy. She goes on to say that from that first visit, that was the most difficult time in her life. And it was made nearly unbearable because the doctor never told her the truth. Here's what she says. My child was perfect. I'm not angry. I'm not bitter, she says. This is in her letter to the doctor who wanted her to abort her child, who does have Down syndrome. I'm sad that the tiny beating hearts you see every day don't fill you with a perpetual awe. I'm sad the intricate details and the miracle of those sweet little fingers and toes, lungs and eyes and ears, don't always give you pause. I'm sad you were so very wrong to say a baby with Down syndrome would decrease our quality of life. And I'm heartbroken that you might have said that to a mommy even today. But I'm mostly sad you'll never have the privilege of knowing my daughter, Emerson. Because, you see, Emerson has not only added to our quality of life, she's touched the heart of thousands. She's given us a purpose and a joy that is impossible to express. She's given us bigger smiles, more laughter, and sweeter kisses than we've ever known. She's opened our eyes to true beauty and pure love. So my prayer is that no other mommy will have to go through what I did. My prayer is that you, too, will now see true beauty and pure love with every sonogram. And my prayer is when you see that next baby with Down syndrome lovingly tucked in her mother's womb, you will look at that mommy and see me and then tell her the truth. Your child is perfect. Baker went on to tell ABC News, I hope he sees Emmy. I hope he sees the words on the paper. Emmy is proof that children with special needs are worthy and can change the world. She's doing that right now. Very powerful letter from a mother of Emerson Faith. Very cute kid, 15 months old now, with Down syndrome. We'll post that on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/TheDonJohnsonShow. You can also find us at Twitter, at The Don Johnson Show. You can go to DonJohnsonMinistries.org if you'd like to find out more about me. Past episodes of this show, links to books, movies, blog posts, all sorts of things. You can subscribe to the podcast of this show at iTunes. Just search for The Don Johnson Radio Show. It should pop right up there. And also, don't forget that I have an app that's available. If you go to your App Store or Google Play, just search for Don Johnson Ministries. That's one of the easier ways to keep updated on the latest shows and everything else going on here at Don Johnson Ministries. Hope that we'll see you at the Elevate Conference coming up June 25th in Santa Clara at the Santa Clara Marriott. I'll be there. We'll have a table. Hope you'll come by and say hi. Also, don't forget to check out my movie, Convinced. Go to convincedmovie.com. We had a great screening this last week in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Great attendance. People very excited. We're already planning another one for that area. One coming up in Lincoln, Nebraska on June 30th. If you would like a screening in your area, please drop me a line. They're very easy to set up and can have a great effect in your parish. It's just been so wonderful to see how God is using this film to get people excited about their faith, but also to draw others in. Atheists, agnostics, non-Catholic Christians, all are being affected by the Convinced movie. So check that out at convincedmovie.com. All right, thanks again for being here. We will see you next time.
Now on DVD and digital download, a story about finding truth, meaning, and beauty in the last place they expected.
I can't become Catholic. What, am I insane? There's no way.
A film to encourage your faith and help you reach out to others.
I thought, this is just nonsense. These people are crazy. Atheism is much more rational.
Convinced, featuring over 20 of today's most interesting and articulate Catholic voices, including Jennifer Fulweiler, Scott Hahn, Abby Johnson, and Patrick Madrid. Get convinced now at convincedmovie.com.